This is Will's Band of the Week for June 16th, 2011. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with, live in studio, Barrett.
Yeah, here I am after a month-long absence.
I was going to introduce you as a guy who partied with my morning jacket.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That'll be the supplemental introduction.
That's going to be on my gravestone when I die.
Yeah.
When they talk,
hosted after party for my morning jacket in little small letters. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Contact info. Send us an email, willsband@yahoo.com. Go to the website, willsband.net, where we post the episodes, and you can make comments there. And I have to approve them, though, because it's a spam-prone system for some reason. And if I don't set it up to approve comments, then we get, like, people trying to sell shoes and stuff.
Right.
It's annoying. So within 24 hours, I'll approve most comments, unless they're completely inappropriate, like selling shoes or something.
Right.
Yeah. And there's the Facebook page, the Will's Band of the Week podcast. And I wonder whatever happened to that other Will's Band of the Week Facebook thing. I haven't looked that up lately.
Yeah, I haven't looked it up in a long time.
Yeah, when we first started the Facebook page, we found someone else calling himself Will's Band of the Week, I think, right?
And was then it Will's Band of the Week?
I think
at least
it was something close to that. And
yeah.
And it wasn't, it was not very active at all, you could tell. But anyway, so ours is called the Will's Band of the Week podcast. And then there is, of course, the Twitter method, Will's Band.
Yep.
Right? Doesn't get much simpler than that, right?
No. Just the at thing, Will's Band.
So that's it. Make use of any and all of those things. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you like the podcast, then post something that says it's good, because that makes us look even more like a real, legitimate podcast.
Exactly. That's somehow, Apple's got some sort of a, algorithm where if you have so many people saying that you are, a quality podcast, maybe a 4 or even 5-star podcast, you kind of move up in the rankings a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
And we've got a long way to move up, too. So you can say you were here from the beginning if you participate in promoting us. So we do encourage that.
That would be cool.
All right. So, there are at least 2 items of music news that I can think of right now that we could discuss.
Well, I know the one that we're going to talk about because we had a brief production meeting.
We did.
Before we went on air, but I don't know what the other one is.
Yes, and that first item is that there was a rock and roll death this week, unfortunately.
Yep.
And this guy was, now I can't remember his exact age, but he was something like 42,
yeah,
relatively young.
Pretty young guy.
And they said that he died of a heart attack. And his name was Seth Putnam. And he was the singer for the band. That's what they were called.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe I just heard you say that.
Yeah. And anyway, interesting name for a band, don't you think? And we looked them up. We wondered, are they on iTunes? And believe it or not, they are. And they sound or sounded kind of like this. That's good, huh?
Did we maybe need to bleep some of that out? I can't tell what he's saying.
I don't know. I can't either. But
you know
that,
what's a good descriptor for that kind of music? That's Cookie Monster rock.
Yeah, that's
doesn't he just sound like Cookie Monster? Or maybe...
Kind of, yeah.
Maybe Animal from the Muppets band.
Right, right. But also, it's sort of the precursor to the new metal, right? The guttural vocal metal. Mm-hmm. Which, well, when did that really start? Probably,
I don't know,
it's been probably at least 10 years that they've had that stuff, right? So, so I don't know, this band that we bleeped out the name of, you know, this stuff that I'm finding on iTunes looks like it's sort of compilation type stuff. So I think the, you know, the era of this band is actually earlier than, you know, the iTunes has something from 1996, but I think they were around like in the 80s, weren't they?
I really don't know.
Yeah.
The only time I'd ever really heard of them is...
Actually, if the guy was only 42, then it must have been the 90s.
Well.
Right?
No, he could have been.
Well, if 30 years ago, 20. He would have been 12.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So that'd be 81, though.
Not yeah. They,
okay.
They weren't from then.
He would have been 20 in the late 80s.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right.
The only
so,
time I'd ever really heard of that band is when somebody's like, what is the worst name for a band you can think of or the most offensive?
And we didn't even...
That would trump anything.
Yeah. We were talking about this in our detailed pre-production meeting. Remember when we had the discussion a few months ago about a band you'd be really embarrassed to tell your parents that was the name of your band?
This would be...
And we didn't think of this one. Yeah, I think you're right. It kind of trumps them all. So, all right. And I've got another item of music news. It's kind of a, you know, one of those personal music news things.
Right.
Last Saturday night, my son Grant and I attended the statewide Battle of the Bands for high school bands.
Wow.
And it's called the Launchpad Competition. Apparently, Les Paul had some involvement in getting this whole thing going.
Uh-huh.
And at least the guy who kept talking between the bands kept talking about how great Les Paul was. And he was kind of going on and on about Les Paul.
Right.
And but it was pretty cool. We saw 13 bands, and each band got three songs, and they were very structured. They were totally on time. They had 25 minutes between bands. So the band would play for like 15 minutes, and then they'd have 10 minutes to set up the next band. And they stayed right on schedule.
Right.
And there was a short break kind of in the middle. They had a little extra break so people could go get something to eat or whatever. So we got a quick burger.
Where was this?
At the Memorial Union in the Union Theater.
Oh, okay.
And I think the majority of the audience was bands and family members of the bands.
Right.
I don't know how many just free agents like us were there. I mean, there are obviously some.
Right.
But and the local, meaning like Madison area bands, definitely had a built-in kind of advantage because they had their fans come.
Right.
You know? But it was really fun. It was neat because if you had a short attention span, you know, no band would be on for that long, and then there'd be another band.
Right.
And they were pretty good overall. I really, you know, I think for Grant, it was a lot more kind of hit and miss, where there were some bands where he's just like, I hate these guys, you know.
Right.
Whereas I was sort of, being an old guy like I am, a little more able to appreciate just about all of them for what they were. There was a pretty good cross-section. There were two or three kind of heavy metal-ish. There were two bands that had, three bands that had horn sections. One of them was a ska band, and the other two were kind of more, you know, dance band type things. There were a couple that were, I guess, sort of alternative rock type stuff. There was one band that you just couldn't describe. They were just bizarre. They had props on the stage, and they were sort of nerds, you know, but in kind of a fun way. It was just, the whole thing was really pretty fun. And then at the end, they declared a winner and a runner-up, and then I guess there was like a third place band that got some kind of award. So I guess basically that was the rank of 1, 2, 3. And I totally disagreed with the judges. The band that won, I would have put probably about fifth. They were okay. But the band from Madison sort of got robbed because they should have finished higher or been a contender. But there was nobody who could say they got robbed by not winning, because it could have been a toss-up between any of about three or four, I think, that were really exceptional. But it was kind of funny because the judges picked a different band, and there was sort of this stunned silence in the crowd when they announced the winner. It's like, and the winner is, and I was like, oh. And everybody was like, really?
Wow.
So, but very cool. I mean, fun enough that I would definitely like to go again next year.
Yeah.
You just, cool. You see what the high school kids are coming up with, and it's kind of fun just seeing like what kind of equipment they all use and what, you know, just how they put together their bands. They did not have any requirements about covers or originals. So it was probably, I'll probably be totally wrong on this now because I didn't really think about it closely enough, but I think probably it was 70% originals and 30% covers. And yeah, so I recommend it. Go to your local high school Battle of the Bands competition because it's pretty cool.
But there had been some kind of a preliminary.
Right. This was the finals.
Okay.
And there were four regionals. And each regional had, I guess, it must have had three bands coming out of each regional, roughly. And so they had, you know, the state divided into four sections. And then each, I saw the list, and each regional had, you know, between maybe 10 and 15 bands. So there were like 40 or 50 that entered it.
Right.
And then this 13 that made the finals. I think they had 12 bands selected for the finals, and then they had like this at-large band that they allowed people to vote on. And I think that was, no, I'm not remembering which band that was. But anyway, one extra band got in that way. So it was pretty cool. Pretty cool. But there were two bands at least that were the closest to, you know, this locality that had like maybe 20 or 30 friends show up and run up to the stage and jump up and down and scream when they played, you know? And I was thinking to myself, okay, this could be either, you know, it's going to bias the judges in favor of them, or there's going to be a backlash because the judges are going to say, well, wait, we can't get influenced by that.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of turned into a backlash because I think two of those bands were two of the best bands that should have beaten out the band.
So the judges are kind of like us, like these guys are too popular. That
could be.
Can't be cool.
Could be, yeah.
I'm going to downgrade them a little bit.
Right. See, this is just a way of introducing these kids to the injustice that is rock and roll, right?
Exactly.
Yep. So they'll do fine for themselves, a lot of these bands. In fact, the organizer guy who kept giving the speeches, he gave this little warning speech about, and he was kind of talking to the parents in the audience. He was like, if an agent approaches you and offers you some sort of a contract, you better have it reviewed by an attorney. He said that they've had people get taken advantage of. And
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. Maybe there were some sleazy music industry executives in the crowd.
Right.
Kind of just sitting back, you know.
Well, we wouldn't be sleazy, but we are trying. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Launching our record label.
Our own label. I mean,
so next year, maybe we can go and pray. I mean, talk to some
right
bands.
Legitimately, we'll meet with their parents and, you know, make sure everybody's comfortable with the contract.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Our record label is yet to get off the ground, so we're still waiting for that perfect opportunity. So I guess it's time to talk about music. We have music to talk about this week, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got one. I'm going to start with mine, okay? Because I told you how much I like this band. And this is an obscure band that you may not have heard of before. And the reason is that they're from Australia. They're called Cloud Control. Now, we've had Cloud Cult for a while. And you've heard of the Cloud Nothings, right?
Yes.
And now we've got the iCloud.
Right.
And now we've got Cloud Control. So it's all part of the cloud trend.
Yes.
In rock and roll. There were horses for a while, a lot of horses all over the place.
Right. And animals.
And bears and stuff.
Bears, yeah. Pandas, wolves. Deer.
Right. Yeah, there were wolves like crazy for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
So clouds are the latest thing, I guess.
And I was actually talking to Chris about this, and he was getting Cloud Control mixed up with Cloud Cult, or he thought it reminded him too much of Cloud Cult and he didn't want to give it a chance or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
We got to talking about the way these bands name themselves in a similar way. And he came up with the name Panda Cloud. That's going to be the next band.
That could be. That could be. Maybe that could be the first band on our label.
Grizzly Cloud.
Well, Chris, if you're listening, don't confuse Cloud Control with Cloud Cult, because I think Chris should like Cloud Control because they've got a little Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros kind of thing going on, I think, a little bit. There's a little hippie rock in this band.
Yeah.
They're, as I said, from Australia, and this album is called Bliss Release. It came out about a year ago in Australia, and I, from a blog I read regularly, Mike Taylor's blog, he put up three songs from this album last year. So I've had these for quite a while, and I've been waiting for the album to come out. And finally, they've released it as a UK release, and the download is on iTunes in the US. So it's still not really even a full US release, I don't think.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. Like, I don't know why they, I guess those evil record company executives don't get things out right away. And, you know, they can't distribute it worldwide.
Right.
But it's clumsy that way, isn't it? Because, you know, with MP3s and the internet, I mean, stuff is kind of, people are going to learn about things worldwide. So it's kind of bizarre when you have a year delay between the release on one continent versus the other.
Yeah, that's weird.
So,
because they didn't really anticipate, you know, statesiders hearing about it and wanting it.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm going to totally go out on a limb and start with track one because I think it's good. This is Cloud Control, and this is called Meditation Song Number 2, Y-O-Y. Pretty skilled fade out I did there, wasn't it?
That was very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, any impressions on this?
Well, it took me a little while to get into it, to be honest. And my attitude for a lot of the time was, you know, I knew that you liked it, and I thought that that was a perfectly reasonable way to feel about it, you know, but that it wasn't grabbing me. It was only really in the last few days that I started to kind of get it a little bit.
Got a little bit more, but it didn't, you didn't just like, it didn't draw you right in.
No, not really. And some of that might have to do with the fact that I was listening to it on the bus. Anybody else out there listen to music on the bus when you're on your way to work?
Do you have...
it's not ideal.
Do you have, you know, the kind of headphones that, like, block out the sound?
No, I've just... No. Yeah, that would be,
See,
good.
I have these great in-ear headphones that, like, I'm not on an airplane more than, like, twice a year. But if I'm ever on an airplane or on a bus, if you have the kind that, like, block everything out,
right?
God, it makes a huge difference.
Does it really work? Even on a plane, you don't hear that...
You don't hear it very much. You hear it, but it's because they create a seal in your ear, you don't hear it much. So,
right.
Yeah. So they take a little getting used to because you have to figure out how to get them to actually, you know, seal your ear.
Right.
But once you get it, if you have a good quality pair, it's great. So there you go.
Yeah.
I'll go on record right now to endorse the Klipsch X5 in-ear headphones. So there you go.
Okay.
All right. I think they're discontinued. Sure. Might be able to get a decent deal on them now.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I would find that comfortable, like the totally blocking your ears.
I've had some different...
I think it would make me feel...
Like you're too blocked from the world, maybe? Yeah. Well, they also vary in the different ones I've tried. Some of them are just really uncomfortable. And it depends on your ears, obviously.
Right.
But these Klipsch ones are a lot more comfortable than the other ones I've tried. There's other ones that have these, they call it a triple flange, where it has like three little things. And so the thing that you stick in your ear is actually like, you know, a centimeter long. It's pretty long. And those I find just absolutely just unbearably uncomfortable because you're sticking this thing way up your ear.
Right.
Whereas these are a little more toward the outside of the ear. So
isn't there like a weird pressure differential thing going on where it's just, you know what I mean?
Not really.
Like the pressure in your head is sort of maybe regulated partially through your ears.
Well,
I'm just making this
up. You'll have to give this a try.
I'll have to do that. It's the Klipsch X5.
Yeah. They make an X10, but X10 is like $349. And that's,
wow.
I mean, I'm like, these were like $150, which is still a little high, but when you consider how much you pay for your iPod, you know, for a really good set, you know,
I might go
it can
for
be
the
worthwhile.
X1s if they have X1. Those.
I can lend you some. I have some I'm not using. They're called the S4, and they're cheaper, but they're still reasonably good.
Right.
So, we'll talk about that in post production. So, well, was there anything that grabbed you enough to play, or are you just going to leave it to me here?
No, I'm going to play song number 3, Death Cloud. This is the UK version.
Yeah, we don't know what the Australian version was, but
this
apparently is the UK version.
So yeah, it kind of takes that one a little while to get going. Maybe the Australian version gets to the point a little more quickly.
Yeah.
But I like it.
Yeah, there's another song that they designate as the UK version also on the album. So I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll have a US version like a year from now and a couple of the songs will be the US version.
Right.
They'll try to tailor it to the US audiences. What do you think they would do to make it palatable for us here?
Maybe they would consider us kind of a focus group and get to the point more quickly on that song.
Maybe we could make some suggestions, yeah, and they would tailor it just for us. They have like a Will's Band version.
You know what these guys should do and what all bands should do? Like, see, these guys are from Australia. Release it there. That's just the name. That's just the album. And then they do a UK version. It's slightly different than a US version. So people that really like it,
they'll
are going to spend
feel like they've got to get all of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they could just change. Think how easy it would be. You could just change like the vocal track, or you could change, each song could have like one guitar line that would be different or something.
Right.
It'd be like, Where's Waldo or something, like what is different about this track? Challenge the listeners, the fans.
Yeah.
But I guess at some point it would become fan manipulation and there'd be resentment then, right?
I suppose, but yeah. I mean, I guess I never buy remix albums or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't either. There would have been a time where, maybe when I was a teenager or in my early 20s when I was like, when I would get into an album, it would be like, just, you'd be so deeply into it, Probably if they came out with any alternative version, I probably would have bought
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Minutemen, Double Nickels on the Dime, like a remix.
I didn't have that one.
Oh my God. That album is still just incredible.
Maybe, did you hear that, what was the band that re-recorded their old album or their old greatest hits?
Kate Bush did that. She recorded a lot of her old songs, like her kind of mid-period songs. And it actually got good reviews, which was surprising.
I think Carly Simon did that, and it got really bad reviews.
That makes sense.
But I'm thinking of a band of, what's the band that had, was it Peter Murphy? Not Peter Murphy. Not, it was like kind of the era of the Buzzcocks, but it's not them. It's not the Undertones. God, it was one of those kind of bands, and they re-recorded it.
Wait. It was the Buzzcocks.
It was?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it was.
Yeah. They did something like, called like Buzzcocks 30, and it was the 30,
maybe that was
30th
it.
Anniversary, and they just recorded a bunch of old songs.
But whatever,
maybe you're thinking of somebody else still.
Well, wherever I was reading about it, they said that it was actually pretty respectable, like even though you'd think like it sounds like a bad idea, but they did a decent enough job when they re-recorded them that usually, like, sometimes you find re-recorded things because like the record contract, still binds them and they can't release the old one. And so they redo it. And usually it's terrible.
Right. Well, the Goat Team did that with their first album.
Did they have to re-record it?
Re-recorded stuff that was
copyright issue
samples
or something?
And
oh, I remember that.
Because you had
the version. You had the earlier version, right?
Right. And then the only time I've ever heard the new version was here one time and you played it.
And you're like, hey, that's different.
Whoa, wait.
It's different than the one you listened to 30 times on your vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good memory.
You would notice the difference, yeah. Yeah. All right, well, let's play one more from Cloud Control, because I here am the big endorser of Cloud Control, obviously. There are probably three or four others that I really like enough that I would play, but I'm going to play the one that's more, kind of different, but kind of fun. It's called Gold Canary. Na, na, way, oh. Na, na, way, oh. I won't hurt your mother. I won't hurt your brother. I won't hurt another. I won't heal at all. I won't hurt your mother. No, don't hurt your brother. All
you softly? Will you lay a curse to my name? Fly away, fly today, as my hands work on the birdcage.
That was another good fade there, Will.
Yeah, I'm getting good at that.
You know, when we have this record label, you can be either an engineer or a producer, too, and kind of work the boards like that.
Be in charge of the fades?
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking of rock and roll cliches the other day, and you know what one of the cliches is? And I actually thought of this. When the last track on the album fades out and then it fades back in again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I could do that, right?
Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll,
you know,
turn it upside down and make it the first track on the album to do that.
We could do that, yeah. Fade it in,
yeah,
and then fade it back out and then back in or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd throw people off. Why do they do fade outs anyway, you know? I mean, on real songs, I always kind of think that why would you fade out your song? I mean, figure out a way to end the damn song and end it. That's my philosophy.
Right.
Right? A fade out is kind of a cop out. It's like, well, we don't really know how to end this thing, so we're just going to just keep playing, and then producer, engineer, you just go ahead and fade that out.
Right.
So
I actually read an essay online about that. I don't know where it was, but somebody talked about the origins of the fade out, and it might have been, you know, maybe like on an old radio show, they're playing some, you know, Tommy Dorsey song or something, and then they've got to go to a commercial break or whatever. They have a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And so they faded out, and that became just something that people were used to listening to.
Yeah, like the transition thing, yeah, or something for the radio. Was that Dick Clark who did that show, like when we were kids? And they would have like a, it would be like a one-on-one competition. It would be like, which song do you like better, song A or song B? And they'd play one, and then they play the other one, and then there'd be a vote. And I remember there'd be like people would be, they would show people like dancing in a studio to the song, and then they made it or something. And I remember there would always be a fade out, you know. I can't remember if they had like the band up there playing, but there were TV shows where they would be playing the recording and then it would fade out, so then the band would kind of have to act like they were like playing quieter or something.
Right.
It's really
right.
Awkward.
Well, Dick Clark had American Bandstand.
Maybe did they do that on American Bandstand? I think maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I mean, I only remember American Bandstand like seeing documentaries with like,
yeah.
And here is Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers with
Why Do
Fools Fall in Love.
See, I'm just a few years older than you. I think I saw American Bandstand like when it was a real show.
Yeah.
You know, like late 60s.
Wow.
Okay. I'm getting kind of old. Did you notice that? My hair is kind of gray. And, you know, I'm just, every day I get a little bit older. I get one day older every
day. That's true.
Yeah.
That's more common than you might
think.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, it's pretty common.
You know something, though? What else is common is us talking about our ages.
That's true. Are we like...
We talk about it a lot.
Do you think we're like overly self-conscious just because we know so many music fans are younger than us?
Probably.
Yeah, it could be.
How does that make you feel? I mean, it makes me feel old, for one. You know, you can't get around that. It also makes me feel like, you know, like if, you know, say you're in a, you know, a marathon. They'll break it down by age group, right? So the older you are, you know, if you have a pretty good time, you can really score high in your age group.
Yeah.
So, like, for music coolness in our age group,
yeah,
we're way, way up there.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. If they did age groups for music coolness, yeah. I mean, like, when we go see a band, they should do some kind of age group thing.
Right.
Where we would be just totally the coolest people there. Right?
So,
age adjusted.
Right, exactly. But when we're there, we're like, people are probably like, is that the guy in the band's dad?
Right.
But we think that people are like, I hope I'm that cool.
Right.
However old those dudes
that's
are.
That's what we choose to think that they are thinking, right? That we're just cool. Yeah. I'm going to keep it that way. I'm going to continue with that, even if it's, you know, fooling myself.
But you know what's great? As you get older, being cool just doesn't matter anymore.
True.
You listening out there, kids? You might think that it's cool, it's important, but it is not.
Right. The older you get, the less you're going to care.
The older you get, the less important being cool necessarily has to become, too. Yep, we have to admit that. Like, if being cool was important to us,
yeah,
we'd really have low self-esteems.
Right. But we're comfortable in our
you don't have a choice but to
oldness.
Become that way.
Yeah. All right. All right, now now I got my big pick of the week, and now there's one endorsed by you. And I've listened to this one. I actually sort of like it. So, but go ahead. Introduce this band, Barrett.
All right. This is a band called Lacera. It's spelled L-A, capital S-E-R-A. And it's a side project by the bass player from a band called the Vivian Girls from Brooklyn, of all places.
Are they really from Brooklyn? Like, I thought they were from San Francisco. Why did I think that?
I don't know.
But it is Brooklyn?
They're from Brooklyn, yeah.
I must have just wanted to believe that there was a band that was not from Brooklyn, but
yeah.
There aren't any.
We should obviously. Have a Brooklyn band for the rest of the month.
Yeah.
Like, for the next 3 weeks, no bands from Brooklyn, at least.
Boy, I don't know.
Let's do it.
We'll try. It's going to be hard.
Anyway, the Vivian Girls is a three-piece, all-female punk band.
Kind of noise pop,
yeah,
sort of, right?
Noise pop.
Reverby noise pop.
And this is a lot less noisy and a lot more melodic. And I can't remember the singer's name, but she usually sings back up. And
she's got a funny nickname. I was just looking her up, or I was looking up who the band members were, and now I've got to find it again because she has a funny nickname. And when you have a funny nickname, it deserves to be mentioned, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so
we
won't
mention your nickname though, because
I'm exempt.
That would be embarrassing,
right? Her name is Kickball Katie Goodman.
Oh wow! Yeah.
Now that's a cool nickname, right?
That's very cool.
Kickball Katie.
Kickball Katie. So yeah, usually she sings kind of the backup and harmony parts for Vivian Girls, and here she's brought to the forefront, and it's 4-1 Brewers right now.
So yeah.
But if you're listening to this, they're probably playing the Yankees or the Red Sox by now, and disregard what I said. This is a different date.
The last time we mentioned on the podcast that the Brewers were ahead, they lost. They blew the lead and lost, so I think that very well could happen again.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's a jinx. Okay, so back to Lacera. And
yeah, so it's a sweeter, poppier, more of a 60s girl group kind of a sound to it. And rather than continuing to explain it, I'll just pick a song. I'm going to pick number 3. It's called You're Going to Cry. So the one thing about this is I don't know how you would reproduce this live, because she's double tracking her voice. It's not, there's no way that you could reproduce this without bringing in somebody that didn't sing on the record. So that's a little thing that drives my wife crazy when bands do that.
Oh, when they
kind of harmonize with themselves. It's like it's just completely inorganic and not realistic.
So she must not like Bohemian Rhapsody then. I mean, not that they couldn't play that live, but...
Right. That's a good point. I think that she does, not that we've talked about it recently, but...
Because that's got like 100 vocals on it, doesn't
yeah.
it? Or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I did see a video of... I looked them up just today when I had a break at work. And, I mean, not that I would ever, like, look up music at work or anything, but they had a video of them from some, you know, I don't know if it was a radio station or whatever, but they're in, like, some kind of small studio, and they did a little live thing, and they sounded pretty good. They, obviously, they didn't layer stuff, but they had reverb on everything, so it kind of still had the same mood to it.
Right.
Reproduced it pretty well.
Yeah.
So... Cool. Okay, two comments. One, this here, right here, this band is why you should listen to this podcast. You know why that is? Because here's a band that I probably read about them for 15 seconds at some point and just kind of glossed over them. And then, but because basically you told me to listen to them, you know, I spent some time with it and I kind of like it, you know, so it's
right.
And so when we endorse a band on this podcast, we're telling you, just have the faith, give it a little time, and it'll,
right.
you know, because a lot of things you're not gonna jump out at you right away,
right?
You know, so okay, so that was comment number one. Number two, there's a band that they kind of remind me of. Did you ever hear a band called Heavenly?
No.
From about 15 years ago.
No.
Yeah, they remember Harry Ragg on WORT?
I do not.
I think Harry Ragg is still on, like. Once or twice a month. He's an old-time rock and roll guy from Madison. And I think he's the guy who played this band called Heavenly. Here, let's just...
Harry
Ragg, come on! You don't know Harry Ragg. You cannot be a Madison music person. And, you know Marco Pogo, right?
Yes.
Harry Ragg's right up there with him. Was like he's an old-time Madison rocker.
But I don't listen to WORT.
Well, he did a show like every Friday night, like for years, on WORT, and now he does it like once or twice a month.
Right,
he, like, shares that Friday slot. And I haven't listened to him for years, but
right.
I think he's the guy who played Heavenly. Here, just let's play a little Heavenly, just so you can tell me if you think they kind of sound a little bit like La Sera.
Yeah, I can hear the similarity.
It was a little maybe poppier or something.
Right. Not at first it started off sounding more like, and then later on it got a little bit more poppy and produced sounding. But I did like, when is that from? What year is that from?
That's 92.
Wow.
So yeah, I had one album from 91 and one from 92.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, now back to La Sera. I thought there was one track that really was kind of the jump out catchy track, and that's track two called Never Come Around.
We'll be right back.
Does that drum beat sound familiar at all?
Yep.
Yeah, now, what did we call that?
The Be My Baby intro.
Okay, so I think we could start a new feature, and like every week we could have a Be My Baby drum beat.
Yeah, we should.
We should try to find those.
So many of them.
Yeah. It's a good drum beat, though.
It
fit that song really well, and I thought that was really catchy, kind of a cool guitar riff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do we have another one to play?
Sure. I'm going to pick number 4, which means we've played now 2, 3, and 4. But the album is kind of front-loaded a little bit.
We'll call this the heart of the album.
It's the heart of the album. And I think Pitchfork actually said that, and they reviewed this back in the winter, you know, so it's been around for a while, but I just kind of heard about it. They said it would have been a great EP, but they kind of ran out of ideas near the end. And I'm not sure I agree with that. I mean, any album made as an EP would be better. I mean, it's by definition. I mean, you can't...
Yeah, and then it'd be too short.
It'd be too short. You'd be...
And we've complained about albums being too long, right?
Right.
But
very few times are they too short for me.
Do you think we've just been raised on... You know, that like 40 minutes is the right amount of time.
That's the right amount of time. Right?
Because a 20-minute EP is just, it's just not enough. And
right.
And usually you go over an hour and it better be pretty darn good.
Over an hour, know? And that doesn't fit on one side of a 90-minute tape, man. And that's too long.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like now we're kind of getting off track here, but the Elvis Costello album, Imperial Bedroom, was a little over 45 minutes. It always, like, my tape version of it ended right at, what was the last
song?
Yeah,
you couldn't get it on one side of the 90-minute tape. It just cut off.
Yeah, the last song was called Boy with a Problem. And it would cut off at a certain point. And I listened to that, whatever. Like, as many times as Chris has listened to that one Y Oak album.
And like, then 87.
Yeah. Then later when I bought the LP... Or well, I don't remember the jarring effect of buying the LP, but when I bought the CD, I heard it go on beyond that point. I was like, "Whoa, what's this?"
Yeah, you had like the alternate version then.
Undiscovered music.
Wow, it was like an extra like minute 15 or something. Yeah,
that's pretty exciting.
That's pretty good.
But number 4.
Okay.
My selection.
This is La Sera, and this track is called Sleep Talking. That one's a minute 57, so I had to fade it so he didn't play the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Or we'd get sued by the, whatever that organization is called, and then they would take all of the substantial assets of the Will's Band of the Week podcast, and we'd be in big trouble.
Wow.
So yeah, I had to fade that out a little early.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good.
But there you go, La Sera. There's another obscure... See, I think we're doing the listeners a service this week, right?
Yeah.
We're giving them some things that... they probably never heard of.
Yeah.
Right?
I was going to one more thing about this.
Yeah.
Is, what was her name? Kickball Katie?
Yes.
Wouldn't that have been a better name? Like, the album is La Sera by Kickball Katie. I think La Sera is a terrible name for a band.
What, does it mean something in Spanish or something?
The
something? No, but La would be French,
like,
right?
Like the serums or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, God, when you got a nickname like Kickball Katie, you ought to use that.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
I think so. Yeah. It could be like Kickball Katie and the somethings.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Katie and the Kickballs.
She's probably saving that for a future band.
That could be.
You got to, when she just totally hits the wheelhouse and she has that band, she knows that it's just all right there. Then she's going to use that name.
But I think I'm not saying that she should leave the Vivian Girls at all, but I think this could really be something if she'd put a little bit more time into it. The songs, some of them seem a little bit like not quite fully fleshed out ideas.
Yeah.
And but I love the sound of it all. So, yeah,
yep.
I give it a high recommendation.
All right, cool. Now, your podcast is cool when you can have a really well-known band and just talk about them as kind of an afterthought, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do here.
All right.
Okay. Now, we have talked about how there are certain bands that are just like these big bands, right? And especially when it's been you and Chris and I, the three of us, there's like one of us that just doesn't totally buy into it. And I'm thinking of like Arcade Fire that you've never really totally bought into, right?
I like the first one, but that was it.
And then the National. Like, we couldn't get Chris to... He said there's 200 other bands that sound just exactly like him, right? And now, at least from our prior conversation, Death Cab for Cutie. You said that you've just really never gotten into them.
I never liked them.
And I think, didn't Chris have one of their early albums on his top 10 of the decade? I know he was a big fan of one or two of the older ones. And I discovered them probably about their third album or so, or maybe fourth. I think it was Transatlanticism that I had on my decade list. I love that album.
Yeah.
And so I kind of caught on to them then. I've kind of been following them ever since, and I've kind of liked... I haven't loved every album they've done, but I've at least liked every album of theirs that I've heard. So I guess I am the Death Cab for Cutie.
Yeah.
I'm pro Death Cab, and you're blah, like, Death Cab.
Yeah.
But they've got a new album, so I thought, this will be cool because we'll mention them third. That makes us cool.
Yeah.
Right? And they've got a new album, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on this because I think people kind of already know. They've been around long enough. People know whether they like them or not. Probably, right?
Yeah, I think for the most part.
You know, I think it's worth playing a couple things off here. So let's see if I can play something and see if you will concede it's at least respectable.
All right.
Hold
on, I gotta cross my arms here.
Okay. And you didn't bring your phone so you could like check the Brewer score or something while I'm playing this. So okay, I'm gonna cut in. There's one that I like that takes a little while to develop, so I'm gonna cut in the middle. The new album is called Codes and Keys, and this is a piece of a song called Doors Unlocked and Open.
We'll be right back.
Death Cab for Cutie.
Yeah, I know I'm supposed to have a reaction. But my reaction is just that, I mean, yeah, I don't hate it. It just is, you know.
Like, yeah, sounds unremarkable to you.
At this point, my reaction to music that they make is you shouldn't take it too seriously. You know, I'm a little bit, my opinion about Death Cab is kind of ossified. I'm not really listening to it to see if I'm going to like this new thing. It's just, I'm just going to be like, yeah.
Well,
I don't want to hear it anymore.
If you're familiar enough with the band, you're going to know by now, probably.
Right. And, you know, it's not a sound that is objectionable. It just doesn't do anything for me beyond at times being like a nice enough sounding song.
Okay. We'll torture you with one more. And
I'm going to take off my headphones and go watch the rest of the Brewery game.
Okay. Barrett will be back in just a few minutes. This is the last track called Stay Young, Go Dancing.
Light is sweet in the belly of the beast, in the belly of the beast, and with her song in your heart, it can never bring you down. It can never bring you down. Lost in a maze of a thousand rainy days, of a thousand rainy days, but when I heard her voice, oh, it led me to the end. Yes, it led me to the end. 'Cause when she sings, I hear a symphony, and I'm swallowed in sound as it echoes through me. I'm renewed. Oh, how I feel alive. And through autumn's advancing, we'll stay young, go dancing.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna reframe how I feel about it. If somebody else is playing it, perfectly fine. I'm not like, get that off. I don't feel that way at all.
If you walked into somebody's house,
yeah,
and had it on, you'd be like, yeah, this is,
yeah,
pleasant
even
enough.
Even if they're playing it at a bar, or restaurant, or whatever. But I just don't ever choose to play it myself. So.
So as the...
In case people needed me to fine-tune, like, how does Barrett really feel? I wish he'd go on a little bit more about that. Yeah, that's probably about enough.
So as the pro-Death Cab guy here, I'll say that a couple of the earlier ones were just, I thought were just really, really exceptional. And this one is probably on par with, like, the last maybe three, which I think are all just decent, good, solid albums. And since I've glommed onto them a little more than Barrett has. So I think it's worthy, you know, if you're already a fan or if you haven't even heard them before, you know, maybe you want to give them a chance. But if you decided after four albums that you weren't that interested in hearing more, then this isn't going to give you anything to, you know, to change your mind probably. Because and you can't really fault bands for not having that much diversity in their sound, right? I mean,
right.
You kind of have your sound, right? And if you try to force it and be too different, it's going to backfire.
Right.
Right? Like when Neil Young tried the electronic album.
Right.
You know, stuff like that.
Right.
Or I always used to say that if Jimi Hendrix had lived, longer, he would have done a disco album. You know, it would have been just terrible.
Yeah, you're right. Totally right.
Hendrix dance disco, right?
Yeah.
And it would have totally backfired. And then like a couple albums later, he would have returned back to his old grungy rock, hard rock sound. And everybody would have said, this is a return to form.
You know? Right.
So, maybe that's what Def Cab needs to do. Make it like just a terrible album that is just completely like totally going off, like trying to branch out, right?
Right.
And just be terrible, and then come back and they say, well, now we've got the old band back.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, I don't know. Maybe their manager is telling them to do that. But anyway, okay, there you go. We've once again, look at this. Look at the timer. Now, post-production will reduce this, but I think it'll still be over an hour. So,
oh, yeah.
This is what happens when we get you live in the studio, you know?
Wow, yeah.
All right.
Well, we'll picked me up at home, and he's going to have to drop me back off because I can't drive. I
it's a, it's right the foot. Will's Band limo service.
Yeah, yeah, very nice.
Yeah, you could, you know, you could break your left foot. You could still drive.
That would be
you
nice.
You could drive in Great Britain or in Japan, right?
Well, the steering, the you sit on the other side. Does that mean that the accelerator's on?
No, I bet you're right. I bet the controls are still on the right because most people are right. You're going to be right-footed. You're right. I never have, but I bet you're right, yeah.
Because I don't remember that being different.
Yeah,
that would be really scary.
That would really throw you off, wouldn't it?
Yeah, totally.
I think if you had to like, well, you do have to, if you have a manual transmission, though, you've got to shift with your left hand.
Yeah,
because you're not going to have the shifter on the right.
I did do that.
Yeah. But there's still the gas with the right foot and the clutch with the left. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Another educational thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and we're going to have a very detailed post-production meeting so we can have another good podcast for you next week. We always come up with something, right?
Yep.
Somebody will probably die, so we'll have some music news for you.
Hopefully.
And,
Well, not that somebody will die, but we'll have some good news.
Yeah, we hope so. All right, let's say goodnight. Goodnight, everybody.
Right, thanks.